Yeah, I know.
All right, welcome to Greek Club. We are we've shifted locations, and today we're recording from Ecstasy Tower here at Concordia Seminary, where students gather and experience the unbridled joy of reading Greek and Hebrew. And as they say in the business, it doesn't get any better than that. We are in Hebrews chapter 2, and we are at verse 5. And if we're lucky, we'll get to verse 10, and everyone will have a headache by the time we're done. So that'll be good. Okay, the writer to the Hebrews is still exalting Christ, and he's about to quote Psalm 8, and he wants us to know once again that Christ is superior to the angels, and that's why he begins in verse 5 the way he does. So verse 5 reads in Greek, Ugar angelois hip etoxen, tain oikumenein tain melusan perihes lalumen. So this is not too bad. Now the U negates the verb hip etoxen, which is from hippotasso, just a weak aorist indicative, active, third singular, with a movable nu. He did not subject. And the he there, of course, has to be God the Father. He did not subject to the angels. And now here comes a direct object. Now, this is a little unusual, and I thought it was, so I looked it up in the lexicon. And oikumene, you can see it's related to oikos and oikeo and so forth. It normally translates, literally it means the being inhabited thing. Right? It's actually a passive participle in form. But it normally translates the inhabited world. So like the Roman Empire or something like that. As opposed to cosmos, which might be, you know, the whole world, the creation, that kind of thing. See? Now, what we have here is not just the inhabited world, but the inhabited world which is about to be. Tain melusan. Right? And so the lexicon actually says this is quite an unusual and remarkable use of this term, because it sort of has to mean the world which is coming, or the new creation, or something like that. But, you know, given the flexibility of words, that's certainly what it means here. Notice that it's an aorist indicative. He subjected already, now not to angels, but it's something which hasn't happened yet. See? So by faith, already we can say God the Father has subjected the world which is coming, not to the angels, but to Christ. So it's really quite a remarkable statement, and there's a lot going on there, which is, again, more theology than grammar. And then we finish off the verse with just a preposition with a relative pronoun, concerning which we are speaking. All right? And the antecedent of the relative pronoun, since it's feminine singular genitive, would be the oikumene, right? The coming age or the coming world. Again, sometimes Hebrews is read as if it were kind of up and down Platonic, but it's really not. It's very eschatological. And again, the writer to the Hebrews is looking forward to the city, which is not made with hands. But again, it's not a city that you reach by going up, but you move forward in God's plan of history until Revelation, the city comes down, right? So, okay, and all that promise hasn't been given to the angels. It's been given to the Son, which is his point. Questions about verse 5. Not too bad. One verb, one direct object, one participle. Can't complain, right? All right. Now we get verses 6 and 7 and 8, which are mostly an Old Testament citation. Dia martyrata de pu tis legon. Ti esten anthropos, hati memneske autu. E huios anthropu, hati episkepte auton. I guess we can stop there. Now, verse 6 is sometimes taken as comfort for all those who know it's somewhere in the Bible, but they can't remember where it is. Okay, but, you know, it's kind of a rhetorical flourish. The writer to the Hebrews probably knows exactly where this is. But literally it reads, dia martyrata is aorist middle. It's a deponent. Dia martyromai means to testify or solemnly bear witness. And the subject is tis. And someone has solemnly testified pu somewhere saying, right? So again, this is not, by the time you're a fourth year student, you ought to have a lot of Bible verses memorized, and you need to know where they are, chapter and verse, just to put the pressure on. I say that because there's no fourth year guys here. So. But Dr. Lessing and I always know where all the chapters and verses are. I know the chapter, he knows the verse. And then we get the psalm citation. What is anthropos, man? Now, hutti, of course, is very often causal, but here it seems to be kind of explanatory, which is one of the lower forces of it, if you could say it that way. That. What is man? That. Now, mimneske is from mimneskomai, so it's deponent, and this is just the present indicative active, well, I guess it's present indicative middle deponent, second singular. So my, a, tai. Remember those endings? That you remember, and this verb takes a genitive direct object. So autu is actually the object of the verb, that you remember him. Or a son of man, that, now we have another deponent verb, episkeptomai, which means to visit or pay attention to, or in a proper context can actually mean something like save, that you visit or pay attention to auton him. And of course, there's some sort of sophisticated typology going on here as the writer to the Hebrews reads Psalm 8 Christologically. Again, that would take a long time to sort of sort out and explain. Grammatically, though, verse 6 is pretty good. Any questions? Comments? Again, you've got two deponent verbs, which explains the eta with the iota subscript ending for the second singular. All right? Okay, good. Yeah, we haven't gotten to the tough sledding yet. Verse 7 and 8, we'll take them together. Elatos as auton, brachu te par angelus, duxe kai time, e stephanos as auton, panta hip etaxas hippocato ton padon autu. The first verb is from elatao, it's an omicron contract verb. And it means to lower or to make less. And so you can see that the eta is just happens because of the augment. This is just an aorist indicative active third second singular. So you, God, lowered or made him lower. Now, brachu means short. It's an adjective. Okay, and it's neuter, singular, accusative. And at this point, a little bell should be going off in your head, remembering that very often neuter, singular, accusative adjectives are acting like adverbs, right? And so it's normally translated for a little while or shortly, if I can say it that way. And the te is just kind of coming along for the ride, okay? It's a little bit of a idiom. So you made him lower for a little while, par angelus, in comparison with the angels. Right? And then a shift, duxe kaitime, with or by means of glory and honor, you crowned him. Right? Verse 8. All things, now our friend Hippotasso again, this is another aorist indicative, this time second singular. See the a, as, e, there's the second singular connecting vowel and ending. All things, so that's the object, you subjected, hippokato is an adverb, or here in this case a preposition, under the feet of him. And by the way, we kind of need our friend Reed Nabil Noor here to expound a little bit on what it means to be put under someone's feet in the ancient Near East. I mean, this is a, I mean, if I am under your feet, I mean, you are way up there and I am way down there. It's not just, you know, putting your foot on some guy who drives the lane and you block his shot or something like that. It's a lot stronger sense of exaltation and humiliation than that. So everything has been put under the feet of the Son of Man.
We just talked about that in Exodus in the Torah.
Were you? Yeah.
Like yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. Was, it came up in one of the texts? Or? Yep, right.
So
right.
Bush.
Say again? You know, I thought about that when the fellow, the reporter or whoever it was in Baghdad, I think it was, threw his shoes at President Bush. And then in this country, people that didn't like Bush, you know, were kind of doing that in imitation. What they probably didn't know is they were saying, F you. Are you allowed to say, I can say that over the air, can I? I mean, this is a horrible, obscene, insulting, you know, and people here in this country just thought it was funny, but that was not funny in Baghdad. I mean, this guy was—he was trying to shame, you know, another person. So it was, and I thought of Nabil, our friend who's a pastor in South Dakota.
Farmer.
Yeah. As soon as I saw that, I thought, my gosh, this guy is over the top. See, so, yeah. So don't be like throwing your shoes when you go into the Middle East. Just keep them on your feet. Right. Yeah. Don't be doing that. So. Okay. Questions or comments on 7 and 8? Pretty good. You get a lot of second singular verbs here, don't you? You don't see those in the Gospels. It's all third singular, third plural. So. All right. Good. Okay. Now we'll dive farther into verse 8. Ento gar hippotaxai auto tapanta uden af aken auto an hippotaktan nunde upo haroman auto tapanta hippotetagmena. Okay, ento plus the infinitive, right? So ento plus hippotaxai. In the New Testament, apparently, I think I looked this up, in older Greek it can have a number of forces. In the New Testament, it's normally temporal, so while. What the commentaries on Hebrew actually suggest here is kind of an explanatory in that, something like that. So, in that, to subject to him all things. Now, you have to supply an agent, if you will, or a subject for this infinitive. It would be the unexpressed subject of the main verb, afaken, so he. So, in that he subjected to him all things. That makes sense? I mean, you don't have an expressed subject because it's the subject of the main verb, which is about to happen. So in that he did this, comma, and then you get to the main verb. This is afaken. Now this is from afi'emi, right? Don't let it fool you. It's not a perfect. It looks like a perfect. By all divine right, it should be a perfect. But actually, if you want to, the forms of afi'emi come up in the New Testament fairly often. If you want to track them, all you got to do, yeah, right, is remember the principal parts of tithemi. Anybody remember the third principal part of tithemi? Etheka. You take the eth off and you got eka, and you take the eth off and you put the off on. Afeka. I mean, it actually tracks precisely. So if you want some help parsing these forms, and if you happen to have the forms of tithemi in your hip pocket, so to speak, then this is the way you can get a handle on hi'emi, and it's more common compound form, af-i'emi. So this is just an aorist indicative active third singular. So he, let's see, so in that he subjected to him all things, he did not leave uden, anything, auto, to him, on hippotaktan, unsubjected. So everything. The promise, which the writer to the Hebrews is speaking of as if it were an established and experienced fact, is that all things, with no exception, have been subjected to the Son. Right? Now, the problem is, as he's about to say, we don't see that yet. See? So it's very profound theology. I mean, it's Paul who talks about walking by faith and not by sight. But this is part of what's going on here in Hebrews chapter 2 as well. So, and this is why he continues. I forgot it was already here in verse 8. But now, upo, not yet. Horomen is just, that's an alpha contract verb, horao, it's just a present indicative active, first plural. Not yet are we seeing, or do we see, all things being subjected to him. You can actually take, this is kind of a fun construction, after a verb of perception, like here, see, and then you trail along and have a predicate position participle. So you've got ta pancha, and then that's the referent of hippa tetagmena, which is a perfect participle, passive. Okay. Anybody have a guess? It actually occurs in the New Testament more often than you might think. If you have a verb of perception, a direct object, and then a participle in predicate position, what does that participle express? Anybody have a guess? Happens more often than you might think. It's actually indirect discourse, much more common in classical Greek. Right. So you translate it as if it were a hati clause. Now, we do not yet see that all things have been and are subjected to him. Which, as soon as you do it that way, makes a lot of sense, you know, in this context. We do not yet perceive that that's the case. Right? All right, so far verse 8. Let's see, anything else? Okay, good. Verse 9. Now this is a little challenging. Tande brachude par angelus elatomenon blepomen, comma, ought to be a comma in there, Iesun diata patima tu thanatu duxe katime estephanomenon hapos karatitheu hiperpantas geusetai thanatu. Do you get all that? Can we go on to verse 10? who wants to tell me how far, the first word in the verse, ton, article, right? How far does its reach go? It's not quite that far. Good guess, actually. Good guess. It stops at elatomenon, at the participle. Okay? So, the one being made lower, then we've got this brachute, which we had in the Old Testament citation, for a little while, than the angels. And now the verb, blepomen. So that ton elatomenon is actually the direct object of the verb. But we see the one having been made lower for a little while than the angels. Comma, Jesus. On account of the suffering of death, the patema tu theou, with glory and honor, having been crowned. Okay, we'll probably take that participle, estephanomenon, another perfect participle passive, as attributive adjectival to Jesus. To Yezun. Okay. So the writer to the Hebrews, and again, remember, this is being heard, right? No, it's beyond me, of course, beyond my ken, to know how people can hear things that are this sophisticated, but I guess they can. And the common consensus is that Hebrews is a sermon that's meant to be delivered orally and appreciated orally, right? But we see the one who has been made lower for a little while than the angels, comma, we see Jesus, right? The one who, on account of the suffering of death, has been and is crowned with glory and honor, right?
The article right there does a lot of work. It's doing...
The first article?
Yeah. Participle and also with the participle
No, I think that the second participle is just anarthros. I think it just doesn't have an article on it. Just like Jesus doesn't have an article on it. Right? Yeah.
So what is this prepositional phrase, starting with da, what does that link on to?
Well, it could link on to Jesus, adjectivally. Right? Because it doesn't make sense to say, we see because of the suffering of death, right? So it's not, I don't think it's adverbial. So you could have it modify Jesus, or you could have it modify the participle who was crowned because of the suffering of death. In other words, because he went through that, you know, Philippians 2, God highly exalted him. That kind of a thought. Now, the real funny thing, actually, that I struggled with is what to do with this purpose clause that's about to happen. Huppos plus the subjunctive, right? In order that, by the grace of God, dative of means, on behalf of everyone, he might, guomai, the aorist subjunctive, middle deponent of the verb to taste, which takes a genitive object, death. In order that, by the grace of God for everyone, he might taste death. Well, it doesn't make any sense to say, we see Jesus in order that he might taste death. That doesn't make any sense. That's the main verb. And it doesn't make any sense to me to say that he had been crowned in order that he might taste death. That gets it out of sequence. I think you actually have to go all the way back to the first participle. See, in order to have this make any sense. That is, he was made lower. The one who was made lower in order that he might taste death. I mean, that's it. I mean, if I'm certainly open to suggestions, but I just couldn't. And that's actually the way the English translations tend to take it, at least a couple that I looked at. So talk about a contextual decision. That Huppos clause is a long way away from a participle, but it kind of has to be adverbial to made lower, I think. Otherwise, it doesn't seem to make any sense. Although, as I mentioned, I'm open to suggestions. Anyway, because I couldn't make it make sense. Why, it has to be kind of a purpose clause, I think. So, you want to go back to 1 John? You know, see Jesus love, love Jesus love, right? Yeah. So, but I think so. Let's put it all together. But now we see the one who has been made for a little while lower than the angels, comma, Jesus, comma. The one who has been crowned with glory and honor because of the suffering of death. And by the way, he was made lower in order that he might taste death by the grace of God for everyone. Right? By the way, the theology here of death is implicit. Death is bad. Right? But the good news is that Jesus tasted it for us, right? And so I can feel this eschatological speech welling up within me, and now I feel the need to talk about funeral sermons, but it's 25 after 12, so we'll just stop right here. The most important event of the week is preacher basketball. The preachers are on a 5-game winning streak, right? This is a sign of the end times. And we're, who are we playing tonight, Will?
Pharmacy,
who we beat at our last outing, right? So just remember, pal, pride goeth before a fall. All right, Greek Club, thanks for coming.
Is that a pontos there?
Say again?
Who bear pontos?
Yes.